Welcome back to the Just Above Average podcast. I am your host, Dominic. This is episode number 9 of the pod. It's been a few weeks since we recapped the election, but the world keeps spinning round and round and things keep happening. So we're jumping back onto the podcast grind. So this episode is number 9 of the Just Above Average podcast. So let's just jump right in here to episode number 9 of the Just Above Average podcast. Today's episode, we're going to play a little game I like to call, Is My Congressperson Worth a Damn? That's right, I am from Missouri, so Missouri will be the first state I will look at in terms of their elected representatives sent to Washington, D.C. to represent them. And I will do a little ranking system for each of the elected officials you send to our nation's capital. Kind of give you whether they're a stud in the capital or just a complete dud. I should preface this whole thing. My kind of qualifications for this are not the personal politics, not their positions that they hold, but rather the amount of sway, how much power they have, whether they sit on powerful committees in Congress, because that's what actually matters. It's not, I mean, it does matter what your political positions are in terms of yourself individually, but in terms of who are the most powerful people in D.C. and who actually has influence and sway, that's not quite as important, but we have 10 elected officials. I am from Missouri, so I am doing Missouri today. If you are listening from another state and would like me to rank your state's representatives, go ahead and leave a comment or a like somewhere, either on Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat, even whatever, wherever you listen to this podcast. Just reach out. Let me know if you would like me to do your state and playing the game, Is My Congressperson Worth a Damn? We're going to start at the bottom with what I believe to be the least influential, probably least powerful people. At number 10, we are starting off with Cori Bush. That is the representative of the St. Louis City-based district, newly elected this year in 2020. She unseated long-term 20-year Congressman Lacey Clay in the primary, and then there's never really been a Republican opponent that was going to ever compete in that district, but she is the Congresswoman-elect for that St. Louis City district. I put her at the bottom because St. Louis voters decided they didn't want to have the 20 years of seniority and relatively decent committee placements representing them. They wanted a bomb thrower person who is very online and shouts about defunding the police, which of course hurts many, many, many Democrats across the country in swing seats. So yeah, she's at the bottom because she has no power. She'll get crappy committee assignments as long as she continues her defund the police and other rhetoric like that. She will continue to harm swing state Democrats, and that will in turn make them mad at her, which will stifle her entire congressional career. She might get a lot of media time. She might get a lot of media play, but she is going to not be very powerful or do very much for Missouri. So she is number 10 on our list. Moving to number 9. This is my congressperson here in the 4th congressional district here in Missouri, and that is Vicky Hartzler. If you were to make a list of all the things that Vicky Hartzler does in Congress, I don't think you could come up with much of anything. That is because in 10 years, 5 terms, the number of sponsored legislation she has gotten signed into law reaches a grand total of, drumroll please, 3. three bills that she has sponsored have become law. One of those was renaming a post office. One of them was a technical clarification saying that federal employees are, yes, indeed, federal employees for terms of the law. And the final one required federal disaster administrators to write a report on the disaster, which, of course, they already do. Those are the three bills she has sponsored and gotten signed into law in 10 years. Yeah, that's a pretty much big fat nothing. She is not on any powerful committees, per se. She's not in leadership for her party. I'll tell you one thing she is really good at, though, and that is filtering federal subsidies and federal money to her families and her own personal businesses. Over $1.3 million in subsidies prior to 2020 had already gone into her family's business, and this year she raked in a cool $500,000 from COVID relief. She was already pretty wealthy, but she has gotten really good at funneling those federal dollars that she votes on, not to Missouri's families that need it, nope, to her own family businesses. Vicki Hartzler is one of the worst representatives in Congress, and I could have very easily put her on the bottom of this list, and she would have been number 10 easily if Lacey Clay had not lost to Cori Bush. So Vicki Hartzler does absolutely nothing for this district. And, yeah, so she sucks. She sucks. And, yep, I hope we vote her out because she's not good. Not good at all. Moving on to number 8, that would be one Senator Josh Hawley. He's part of the reason he's so low on the list is that he hasn't been in D.C. very long. So when you're a senator, it's all about longevity, all about who has seniority. He just doesn't have that. So already he was going to be near the bottom of the list, regardless of how I feel about him, you know, with my personal politics. He just has not to this point done very much to warrant, any clout. He's pretty good about going on Fox News and talking against quote unquote elites. Yeah, that's right. The guy who went to a private high school that cost $14,000 in tuition and Stanford and Yale Law School and clerked for the Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice, that is, of the Supreme Court. Yeah, that guy, not at all an elite, but that's who he loves to rail against, which makes absolutely no sense. But apparently his consultant people who are prepping him for his run for president have told him that's where the Republican Party is, populism, and resume be darned, it's all about against elites, even though he is by definition 100% elite. And I'm not against anybody going against to those elite schools and using that as qualifications, but you can't in one hand say, yep, I'm a Yale-educated lawyer, and that's why I'm good on the Judiciary Committee, while on the other hand saying, these dang Yale law school elites, that just doesn't work. I think he's more interested in being president and going on Fox News than he is actually doing work for the state of Missouri. We've kind of seen that throughout his entire career. He wasn't interested in being attorney general. He just wanted to use it to step up and go for the U.S. Senate. Anybody with eyes can see that, despite him having that famous ladder ad about career politicians climbing the ladder, when that's exactly what he does. But moving on to number 7, one Mr. Billy Long of the Southwestern Springfield Joplin District here in the state of Missouri. He's gotten some media press for being an auctioneer, and he has every once in a while shown he has a spine. but he gets smacked into the party line pretty easily. He does, and I do have to compliment him here, he does do some district work in terms of transportation needs and getting bridges and things like that. He does do a decent job at that. And I just want to kind of compare Billy Long and Vicky Hartzler once again, because I told you Vicky Hartzler had three bills that became law in 10 years. Billy Long was elected the same year, same time as Vicky Hartzler, Billy Long was. He has 66. That is well over 20 times as many. That's 23 times as many bills that Billy Long has gotten signed into law compared to Vicky Hartzler. That just goes to show how bad Vicky Hartzler is at being a congressperson for the state of Missouri. I'm not too much of a fan of Billy Long, but I do have to give him a little bit of credit. He does get some stuff done, even if he is really just towing the party line 99% of the time. Number six, we have the kind of central eastern portion in between Columbia and St. Louis area, in Blaine Lucktemeyer. He is the ranking member on the subcommittee for consumer protection on the Committee of Financial Services. In a Democratic administration and a Democratic Congress, this can actually be a pretty powerful committee in terms of protecting consumers and people from fraud. This is going to be like the committee that gets rid of like robocalls and fraud, that kind of stuff. So being on that committee can be somewhat beneficial and have some power to it. In Congress, you can either go one or two ways. You can go and be in leadership and be on kind of every committee, or you can find your niche and kind of focus on that one committee. And that's kind of the direction that Lucktemeyer has gone, focusing on that financial services committee. Really low-key member of Congress, doesn't rock the boat ever. But yeah, so he's found his niche, does kind of fit the district, those exurbs of St. Louis. Yeah, so he's not nothing, but certainly not not a power player in Washington, D.C. At number five, we have Congresswoman Ann Wagner of the 2nd Congressional District, just outside the city of St. Louis. Most of those suburbs and then, you know, part of those exurbs there in St. Louis. She has some national juice, but Ann Wagner is from the Bush era GOP. That's kind of her realm. So if we had a Mitt Romney kind of presidency or whatever, rather than a Trump, she would be in a really good shape. But the GOP at the moment is not in that headspace. And so she has really fallen in credibility and in terms of power. This is a person who has some real juice with the RNC. She got an ambassadorship under Bush. But yeah, I mean, in a Trump era or post-Trump era where the bomb throwers are going to take power in the GOP, she has her ceiling capped. And that kind of showed with she was going to be the front runner to take on Claire McCaskill in 2018 in that Senate race until John Danforth and some of those good old boys decided that they wanted Josh Hawley instead. And so they put Ann Wagner back in her corner of St. Louis. They still support her enough for her to win re-election, but in terms of upward mobility and power playing, she is kind of left in a spot where the party isn't anymore. It's not to say she's bad at her job or anything. It's just kind of not where the Republican Party is at the moment. Before we get to the top four, being those real power players in the state of Missouri congressional delegation, let's fit in an ad break here on the Just Above Average podcast. Welcome back to the Just Above Average podcast in the Is my congressperson worth a damn episode ranking system. We have reached the final four, the top four in terms of power and influence among our congressional delegation. These top four are kind of separate, I think, from the other six, and the fact that I think they have some real juice, they have some real power in D.C. You may not agree with what they say. I certainly don't. But in terms of having power for the state of Missouri, these four definitely do have it. Number four, checking in the northern part of Missouri, and that is Congressman Sam Graves. I have a couple kind of disclaimers here. The first being that I kind of knew and was around Graves' son in college at Mizzou. We kind of knew each other a little bit. But the other part of that is the fact that Sam has a brother named Todd. And so this is kind of more of a tag team effort than it is an individual with Sam Graves and this power. Todd is the one who's kind of been holding down the home front, running the Missouri GOP and doing things more at the state level. But it does go to show that the Graves family has power within the Missouri Republican Party. Sam Graves in D.C. is on two really big committees, the first being Armed Services. We have multiple military installations here in Missouri, Fort Leonard Wood, Whiteman Air Force Base. His second big committee, where he is the ranking member, that is the top person who of the party in the minority, Republicans right now in the House, and that is for transportation and infrastructure. If we ever do get a transportation or infrastructure major package, which Joe Biden has said will be a major priority in his administration, this committee will be where a lot of that work happens. So it was always a running joke during the Trump era of Infrastructure Week, where nothing ever happened. But under a Biden administration, I do think something will happen. It's probably something that will actually get some bipartisan support. And Graves will have a big part in kind of crafting and piecing together what that package looks like, which states get that money, a.k.a. being ranking member on the committee means that Missouri is going to get more than our fair share, hopefully, fingers crossed. Sam Graves, definitely a guy who has a bit of sway in D.C., but not quite at the level of the top three. But I did think he definitely deserved to be in the top four. Moving on to number three. That is one Mr. Jason Smith of the Boot Heel in the southeast portion of Missouri in the House. He is also in House leadership. So for those of you who don't follow politics, being in leadership means you're the person, or you are the people on the leadership team who determine where your party goes, determine what your party pursues in terms of legislation, you know, kind of who gets put on which committees. So the pain in the ass people go to the worst committees and the worst subcommittees with no power. These are the people who kind of put them there. So Jason Smith is like roughly the sixth or seventh most powerful Republican in the House at the moment. The problem for him is that the fact that on the House side for Republicans, not very many of them are looking to move on to the Senate or retire. Like on the Democratic side, all three of the top Democrats in the House are retirement age or have pledged to move on like within 2 to 4 years. But on the Republican side, that's not really the case. So he's kind of hit this wall of being like fifth, sixth, seventh most powerful in the Republican Party. But he rose very quickly, was first elected in a special election in 2013, I want to say. Anytime you rise that quickly, you got something going for you, you know? You don't rise to the level of leadership without having some serious gumption and guts and knowing how to play the game. He's on Ways and Means, which is the most powerful committee in the House. He knows obviously what he's doing. He has power. 100% in the top three most powerful or best, however you want to say it, congressional representatives in the Missouri delegation. There's no way around it. You could disagree with his politics all you like. Just as I've said multiple times before, a lot of these people, I disagree with him. But in terms of just recognizing power, there is no disagreement there. He is definitely one of the most powerful House Republicans. Number two, the man from Kansas City, Mr. Pastor Emmanuel Cleaver. This is someone who might shock a lot of people in terms of being how high he is on the list, but Cleaver is really respected in D.C. He is a former Congressional Black Caucus chair. If you look back at the past chairs of the Congressional Black Caucus, it's kind of the who's who of Black Congress people in our country's history. You know, Elijah Cummings was a Congressional Black Caucus chair. Jim Clyburn from South Carolina, who kind of jump-started Joe Biden's South Carolina and then presidential ambitions. Cedric Richmond, who's on Biden's, like his policy, whatever, for his campaign, and will certainly have a spot in the administration. So kind of the who's who are in charge of the Congressional Black Caucus, which is roughly 50 to 60, depending on the term, African-American members of Congress, mostly Democrats, obviously, but always there are a few Republicans sprinkled in there. But definitely has a lot of respect from people. So last time in 2010, when we were redistricted, his Kansas City district got spliced out and had some really weird rural areas put into it, like Saline County. But as part of that, he got the House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson to come down and do a forum in Missouri with Missouri farmers and cattlemen and a whole bunch of ag groups down here. And if you've ever followed Peterson, he doesn't go anywhere outside of D.C. and Minnesota, hardly. So the fact that he came to Missouri with Cleaver means that, Cleaver's got some respect all across both sides of the aisle. The fact that he's number two ahead of Graves and Smith on this list is the fact that Democrats are in the majority. They control the House. So as much as you can say leadership does 100% matter, it's everything. But in the House, it's all about who's in the majority. That's who holds the power. In the Senate, being in the minority, you can still filibuster and you have some level of control. In the House, the majority party pretty much owns what's going to happen. So that's kind of why Cleaver was above those other two, even though they're both power players. Cleaver is in the majority, has a lot of respect. So that's kind of where things sit, which means the top spot goes to Senator Roy Blunt. The Blunts are kind of the gold standard for Missouri Republicans, kind of like how Mel Carnahan and the Carnahan name was kind of the gold standard for Democrats throughout the 90s and 2000s. He has a long, illustrious career throughout Missouri politics with Secretary of State. He made his chops in the House, where he rose to be the House Whip, which is like number three in the House for the Republicans when they were in the majority. Even for a small time was House Majority Leader while Tom DeLay stepped down. The dude has some juice. He may not be the most exciting on TV, but I think a lot of people don't understand the difference between appearing on TV and being boisterous there versus having actual power. Roy Blunt does have power. He is like number 4/5 in the GOP Senate for Republicans and being in the majority, they, yeah, that's a pretty powerful spot. As I mentioned before, he may not be exciting on TV, but he does have a big stick in terms of the Capitol. He's also what I would like to call the king of technically correct. He's had a few media interviews lately blow up over calling Biden president-elect or not. He is the king of the technically correct answer. And he was talking to, I don't even know what media outlet it was, but he was asked a question about, why don't you call Biden president-elect? He goes, well, he's not president-elect until the Electoral College meets and confirms the blah, 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 whatever. But that answer was technically correct. And the fact that, yeah, officially he's not technically president-elect until the things are officialized in the Electoral College and yada, yada, yada. But, I mean, in reality, he called President Trump president-elect after he won before the Electoral College met. But he's really good about diffusing media questions and narratives and things by saying things that are technically correct, even if they're not kind of really reality. But you got to give the dude props for being able to do that while on his feet. He is 100% the most powerful person in the Missouri congressional delegation. He's actually kind of one of the ones who's in charge of the inauguration. So it'll be interesting to see how he handles that with Joe Biden being elected president and being inaugurated this January. But without a doubt, he is tops in terms of the Missouri congressional delegation. That's it for this episode of the Just Above Average podcast. Once again, if you would like me to do your state, if you are listening from another state, what your if your congressional representatives are worth a darn, go ahead and give me a shout out or a suggestion with a comment or anything like that. But hope to continue to do these things. We'll see if we can rustle up some more topics here as things roll along. Might be a little less frequent than the weekly podcast we were having before, but thank you for tuning in, and we will see you next time.